Okay, you are tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are now listening to the Sitting in the Park show. Today is a special show because I am doing an interview with Eddie Sullivan, who is in the studio right now. He will be talking about all the groups that he was in and all the music that he wrote for other people. So, first of all, Eddie, thanks so much for coming on down.
You're very much welcome. Thank you for the invite.
Okay. So, first of all, what part of Chicago are you from?
From south side of Chicago.
South side?
Mainly was from Augier Gardens.
Okay. So, and as listeners might know, there's a ton of groups coming out of the gardens.
Oh, yeah.
And you were... Your group originally was the Four Gents.
The Four Gents. You got it.
So you were part of the were you part of the first generation of groups coming out of the garden?
Probably so. We never did find out was there any groups before us.
Okay.
But I think we were just the first crop of doo-wop groups. Yeah.
So what year? So first of all, were the gardens actually opened up?
Now that I don't know, but I know we was there in the mid 50s.
Is that when you moved there?
Right.
Okay.
Mid 50s.
And how did you get started singing?
It's kind of hard to say. I can't really pinpoint how I got started, but I can say that I was looking at the Debonairs, and I was so impressed with their sound, and they got me interested in singing.
Okay, so the Debonairs were the group that did Mother's Son.
Exactly.
And they were already singing in the gardens before you started
exactly.
singing.
Right.
So how old were you when you started singing?
Oh, I guess I had to be around 12 or 13.
Okay. And so were you even in high school when you started?
No. I was in grammar school.
So when did you form a group, the Four Gents?
The Four Gents? We're looking at mid-50s again. Because I met them when I moved to Augier Gardens.
So they were already there?
They was already there, right.
Did they already have a group together as the Four Gents?
No, they did have a group, but it wasn't the Four Gents. They was called the Monotones.
Okay. And so... You started singing with them, and how many guys were in the group?
I never did sing with the Monotones.
Well, I meant the guys.
As far as the Four Gents, it was just four of us.
That makes sense with the name. what were the name of the people in the group?
Okay, Wyman Bryan, he was one member, John Staple, Lewis Pritchett, and myself.
And are any of the other three guys still around?
Two of them passed away. One lives in Florida.
Okay. So you ended up cutting a record called On Bended Knee and Linda.
Exactly.
And it was for the Park record label.
Uh-huh.
So were you in high school when the record came out?
Was in high school.
How did you get a record deal?
A guy by the name of Mr. Denton, he approached and said, you ever heard of the Children's Building in Augier Gardens?
You could tell me about it.
But we used to rehearse there quite a bit, and Mr. Denton heard us through the door, listening to us, and he was very impressed with our sound.
So was that a building that a lot of groups rehearsed in?
Exactly right.
And Mr. Denton, did he live in the gardens too?
Yes, he did.
So pretty much a guy in the gardens heard you guys and put out a record on you.
Mm-hmm.
And what parts did everyone sing in the group?
Okay, I was the first tenor and lead singer. I don't know how I got to be the lead singer. They just put me out there. John was like baritone and bass. And Lewis, he was like baritone and second lead singer. Wilmer Bryan, he did first tenor.
So do you remember how old you were when this record was cut?
I had to be 13. The reason why I remember that, because at the same time, Frankie Lyman came out.
Okay.
And he was 13 also.
Okay.
So I was proud of my age because I was the same age as Frankie Lyman.
So what was the intended A side? Was it On Bended Knee or Linda?
Which side was the A side you're speaking of?
Yeah.
Okay, Linda was supposed to be the A side. But we did get a lot of response from On Bended Knees.
Okay, I'm going to play the On Bended Knee side.
Okay.
So the listeners know your first record, what we're talking about, and then
right.
You could talk some more. So this is Eddie Sullivan singing lead with his first group, The Four Gents, and this track is called On Bended Knee. Okay, that was just the Four Gents with On Bended Knee. And if you're just tuning in, Eddie Sullivan, the lead of the Four Gents, is in the studio talking about his music. And before playing the record, Eddie was saying that he was 13 years old when he recorded the record.
Right.
Do you remember what year it came out?
Oh, we're looking at about 56, 55, 56 in the area.
And did it get any play on the radio when it came out?
Linda did.
Okay.
Her kid used to play it all the time.
So were you like local stars in the
gardens? Yeah, local stars. Dick Biondi.
Okay.
He used to play it also.
That's okay. was he on WLS?
He was on WLS.
Okay.
Right.
So it got played not just on black radio stations, but
mm-hmm.
on white stations too. It got
right.
some crossover play.
And one more, Marty Faye, remember him?
I don't actually.
Okay.
What station was he on?
Oh, I couldn't tell you what station, but he had a he was real popular for if he played a new record. And if he didn't like it, he would break it in half over the radio.
Okay.
So we were scared he was going to break our record, but he didn't. He liked it.
So, and you were just starting off in high school when that came out.
Yeah.
Did you start doing more talent shows, or were you doing talent shows anyway?
Well, talent shows, yes, we did. On stage, we was compared with the Coasters. We did a lot of comedy, novelty stuff on stage.
Okay.
And, our biggest competition was the Debonairs.
Okay, but they were a little bit older than you.
Right, exactly.
So were you just like the young group in the neighborhood, pretty much? And do you remember some of the other groups from the Gardens at the time?
Okay, we had the Debonairs, we had the Nobles. I don't know if you're familiar with them.
Okay.
The Belvederes. The Quintones. They had a record out also.
Okay.
On the same label.
Okay. So how come the Four Gents never cut any more material?
You know, I really couldn't answer that directly because we did that one record and it looked like everything just didn't go right. We did some more records, but they never did come out.
Okay.
Now, you mentioned something about, Stormy Weather?
Yeah, that's what you just signed, that Bob had the original studio dub.
Okay.
Which we'll play if we have time.
Okay.
But I definitely want to get into all the other stuff you did, because you did a lot of stuff in your career. So you ended up not cutting another record until the early 60s,
right,
where you cut a solo record called I'm Looking for My Baby.
Yeah, Eddie Soul. I changed my name, just tried to make a little noise with the name change. And I'll never forget when I brought the record home, I told my father, look, I just did a record by myself. And he looked at it and said, Eddie Soul, what happened to Sullivan? He didn't like that at all.
So what were you doing in between, 1956 and 1963, whenever this record came out?
Did a lot of MCing. I was MCing for the Shylights.
Okay.
At that time.
In the early 60s?
Early 60s.
So they were still the Chanteurs back then?
No, when I started MCing for them, there was the Shylights.
Okay.
Now, they used to be the Highlights.
Okay.
At one time.
But before that, they were the Chanteurs.
And
they had one record as the Presidents, I think. They had a record called Pots and Pans.
Exactly, that's it.
So you actually went to high school with some of them, is that right?
Right, Marshall. It's a funny thing, when I went to Hyde Park, I was kind of a lonely guy, always sitting in a corner. Now, how I got to the groups there, they asked, anybody here can sing second tenor, or first we need a first tenor. So, of course, I said, well, okay, I'll give it a shot. And they accepted me as far as singing these different parts.
So you actually sang what the Shylights are singing?
Well, not on stage or anything like that, but in high school, yes.
Okay, you were in the high school version of the group.
Right.
So, and you actually originally, because you were from the Gardens, went to Carver, is that right?
Right.
And then your last 2 years you went to Hyde Park?
Right.
And that's where the Shylights were at the time.
Uh-huh.
So that's how you said you went to school with Marshall?
Marshall and Sprill.
Okay.
Creedell. He was known as Creedell at that time.
Okay.
Then he became known as Red.
Okay. So you went to high school with three of the members.
Right.
And Eugene didn't go to Hyde Park, did he?
No, I think he went to another school. I can't recall exactly what school he went to. But they were one of the top groups out there.
So in that period between the Four Gents and your solo record, you went to school and you were doing MCing for other groups?
Right.
So when you did MCing, what did that involve? You just announced them?
Just announced them on stage.
Okay.
That's about it.
Did you ever sing with any other groups around that time that didn't record?
During that time? During that time, I was in a group by the name of the Desideros.
Oh, okay. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
In fact, I think Bob Minor brought one of the records of the Desideros to play. So what's the story with the Desideros?
We had a good sound. Our only record was Flatfoot Charlie. And it got a little play on it.
And I think that came out around 1960,
that area.
So the Desideros, were they also from the Gardens?
No, they wasn't from the Gardens.
So were you still living in the Gardens at that time?
I believe I was, because I moved to the city, what we call the city. Algier Gardens is so far out.
Okay.
But we had a good group. We had a fantastic group. In fact, our group was compared with Flamingos, the sound.
Who were the members of the Desideros?
Now, if I can recall, Dale Brown, Marshall Thompson, myself, and a guy named Joe. I can't think of his last name, but he had that Flamingo sound.
So Marshall Thompson was actually in the Desideros, and he's on record.
Mm-hmm.
And so did you cut this when you were in Hyde Park? Or when you were, did you graduate? When,
I believe I graduated at that time.
Okay, so but it was soon after you graduated.
Mm-hmm, right.
And the record came out on a label called Renee.
Renee Records.
Do you remember who ran that label?
Okay, that was Leo Astell. He was the producer of the record. In fact, he was producer of many of the top acts in Chicago, which included, like, the Emotions. He had the Jack's Five, the Shy Lights. Can't remember all the groups of all the artists he had, but he had quite a few.
He even had some other record labels later, too.
Mm, right.
So this record I'm going to play is called Flatfoot Charlie.
Okay.
Who sings lead on this?
Oh, boy. And I can't recall his name, but I can see his face.
Was it the Joe guy you just...
No, okay. It was a different personnel at that time. The guy on lead on this, he came later.
Is Marshall Thompson on this?
He's on this record.
Okay, well, I'm going to play This is the Desideros with Flatfoot Charlie.
Okay.
Okay, that was just the Desideros with Flatfoot Charlie. And if you're just tuning in, I have Eddie Sullivan in the studio right now who's talking about his music. And you guys cut that record, I think, around 1960?
Probably in that area, right.
And it got released on the Renee label, which you said was Leo Astell's label.
Mm-hmm.
So how long was the group together before you cut that record?
Before we cut it? Oh, about a year or so.
And it had members of the Shy Lights in the group, right?
Mm,
so
right.
Not only Marshall Thompson, but who was singing bass on the record?
Ray Escridell.
Okay. So that record came out. Did that get any play?
Very, very little.
Okay. And did you do any shows?
No. I can't recall doing any shows, actually.
So the Shy Lights didn't exist as a group yet,
no,
right?
No.
So did the Shy Lights come out of that group pretty much? Come out of the Desideros?
Pretty much so. Well, they still had the Chanteurs.
Okay.
And Marshall and Creedell, when we broke up, they went over to the Chanteurs. That's when they changed the name to the Chalets.
So the Chanteurs had Eugene Record in it, right?
Okay, now, the Chalets, they wasn't the Chalets at first. They was called the Highlights.
Yeah, they had the Mix song as the Highlights. And I'm So Jealous.
Right,
yeah.
That's them.
And you did that to me. That was another one of their...
Yeah, there's another one.
So you did that record around 1960, and then you cut a solo record in 1963, I'm Looking for My Baby.
Right.
And that originally got released on the Rene label also.
Exactly.
And it also got released on a label called Mark.
Okay.
You don't know who ran that Mark label or how you got onto that other label?
No, you got me on that one.
Okay.
All I recall is a Rene.
Well, I'll be playing the record if we have time.
Oh, sure.
But there's a lot of stuff you were involved with and wrote, which I definitely am interested in playing, so hopefully we'll get to all of that stuff.
Okay, all right.
So you cut that record in 63 as A-Sol, and did that get any play in Chicago? But I'm Looking for My Baby.
I'm Looking for My Baby. It got a little play. In fact, I thought it was going to go off and be a big hit, but it didn't.
So why did you decide at that point to become a solo artist instead of a member of a group?
Leo, when he approached me, he told me, you know, if I want to change my name, you can do so. So at that time, I couldn't tell you why I changed the name, but I did change the name to Eddie Saul.
But did Leo suggest you become a solo artist?
Yes.
Okay. So did you try for a while to do other stuff as Eddie Saul?
No. That's the only record that I did under Eddie Sullivan. I mean, under Eddie Soul.
Did you ever perform as a solo artist in Chicago?
No.
Okay. So you just cut a record and then
that was
it.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a while before you ended up recording again, and you recorded as the Classic Sullivans. But before that, you actually wrote for some other people?
Yeah, I wrote for quite a few people. Denise Chandler, which is Denise Williams today, Diane Cunningham, Candy Love, Candice Love. She the one did Boy, That's a No-No.
And that's the record you wrote, her hit,
right.
Her big hit.
Now, an interest note on that, I really didn't write that for her. I wrote it for Ruby Andrews.
Okay.
If you listen to the song, you can hear a lot of Ruby Andrews sound in it. But we took the song to her, and she didn't like it. So we recorded off of Candice Love.
So one of the first things you wrote was the Diane Cunningham record,
Diane
right?
Diane Cunningham, Sunday Baby.
And I think, was that 67, something like that?
I can't really pinpoint the year, but it had to be in that area.
How did you get involved with writing, and specifically with Diane Cunningham and the producers? I think Clarence Johnson and Kenny Wells were involved with that.
Right, they were. They was very impressed with my writing, and they asked me to write some songs for some girls.
How did they know about your... Had you written for other people before?
Just the Four Gents, and I can't think of no other groups. I never really did get into writing until I started writing for the young ladies.
So how did you even know Clarence Johnson or Kenny Wells, or did they just knew you from around town?
They knew me by me coming around the Chanteurs. Kenny Wells wasn't involved as far as singing at that time. Clarence Johnson was the singer, and
he was the bass singer for the Chanteurs.
No, he wasn't a bass singer.
Oh, okay, but he was
a baritone.
Okay.
I can't really say a pinpoint again how did Clarence get me involved in regards to writing, unless he just heard my writing. It's the only thing I can say. There was another guy by the name of Rick Williams.
Yeah, he did the Candice Love stuff.
Exactly. He had the one that had out
the Zodiac record.
Right.
So the Diane Cunningham. So you started writing for a bunch of female singers in Chicago.
Right.
So was it just Clarence's idea to sort of have you write for them? Or?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So the one of the first records you wrote was for Diane Cunningham, Someday Baby.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll play the record and we can talk some more.
Okay.
So this is Diane Cunningham, written by Eddie Sullivan, Someday Baby.
Okay.
Okay, you're tuned to WHBK 88.5 FM in Chicago. That was just Diane Cunningham with her first record, Someday Baby. And it was written by Eddie Sullivan, who is in the studio right now, talking about the records that he was involved with and that he sang on and that he wrote. So that record was the first of many Chicago female records that you wrote.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a big local hit in Chicago, right?
Yes, it was.
And so another person you wrote for that you're talking about was Candace Love.
Right.
And that you did for Rick Williams.
Exactly.
So the Candace Love record must have been one of the biggest records that you wrote, too.
Yeah, at that time, it's my first big record.
Okay.
I was so proud of I had a hit record out.
And so that song, Uh-Oh Boy, That's a No-No, is kind of unusual subject material too.
Right.
She's talking about being like the guy touching her.
Uh-huh. Exactly.
So that came out around 69, something like that.
In that area.
And then, which I'll play if we get a chance. And you know that was even Barbara Lewis covered that record.
Right. She sure did.
And Candace Love and you actually wrote for Candace Love's group later, Love Horn.
Yeah, they did If.
And you were one of the writers on that song, too. So another group you wrote for was from the Gardens, the Love Lights.
Yes, wrote for them.
So what songs did you write for them?
I wrote Bumpy Roll Ahead.
Okay.
I was associated with How Can I Tell My Mom and Dad.
Okay.
I think it's one more. I just can't recall which one it is. But we did a lot of stuff with the Love Lights. In fact, they're the biggest group out in our gardens, Sunken Gardens.
And you weren't living in the gardens at that time.
No.
But it still must have been kind of exciting. You were writing for your hometown.
Right.
your neighborhood. So you were involved with the writing of How Can I Tell My Mom and Dad and Bumpy Road Ahead, and they're both, I just want to say they're both very well-written songs.
Thank you.
So, yeah, like one thing about your songwriting, it's kind of like they're not sort of just generic kind of love songs. Mm-hmm. Like they're like well-constructed, well-written songs.
Taking a chance, the type of lyrics I was writing.
Yeah.
It's kind of adult songs, you know. But it got over pretty big.
So how did you develop that writing style? Were you always writing like that?
Yes, but I didn't really concentrate on the stereo line. I just wrote songs that was big with as far as the stereo is big with the ladies. So I always put it in melodies and put it in song.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to play Bumpy Road Ahead just because I think it's a really good song.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And we could talk about some of the other people you wrote for, and then we could talk about your group, the Classic Sullivans.
Okay.
So this is the Love Lights with Bumpy Road Ahead.
Can I? The love we found, well, it just won't die. There's a bomb.
Okay, that was just The Love Lights with Bumpy Road Ahead, one of many records written by Eddie Sullivan for female groups in Chicago. And so another singer you wrote for was Sunday Williams.
I forgot about her.
And the track you wrote was called If That's What You Want.
Oh, man. You really bring back memories. That's the record I thought was going to go super big.
But it
just didn't go. I don't know what happened.
And that was her follow-up to Ain't Got No Problems.
Right, exactly.
And you wrote for a couple acts from Gary, actually. You wrote for The Passions.
The Passions, yes.
And the track you wrote was I Can See My Way Through.
Yes, that's another good one of my favorite tunes.
Do you remember how you got hooked up with them and writing for them? Because it was actually, I know Leo Astell might have been involved.
Yeah, he was the manager of The Passions. So he asked me to write a song for them. That's how it came about. And I Can See My Way Through was one of the songs.
Okay. And Denise Chandler was, and Diane Cunningham was from Gary too, I think originally, but Denise Chandler was also from Gary, and you wrote some of her first records.
That's right.
Before she became Denise Williams and more famous. How did you get hooked up writing for Denise Chandler?
Again, this was through Clara Johnson. He used to manage her.
Okay.
And he asked me to write some tunes for her.
Yeah, I know he put out some records on her on his label Lock Records.
Right.
But the records that you wrote three different records for her, and they came out on the Todlintown label. So I don't know if that was before Clarence had the Lock label or what the story was.
Todlintown, I believe, was after.
Okay.
If I'm not mistaken. So you're taking me back here. But there's a good tune. You heard of Goodbye Crew World?
Yeah.
Okay, I wrote that for her. A Glorious Feeling.
Yeah, definitely.
Let me say.
I'll play one of them.
Okay.
But I want to get through the whole story first because you have a lot of stuff that you recorded yourself also.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So at the time, you were mainly writing for artists in Chicago. And were you interested in starting to sing and record again?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so you ended up singing and performing with the Classic Sullivans.
Right. Those were my sisters.
So what was the lineup of the Classic Sullivans?
Lineup included two of my sisters, Barbara Sullivan and Lorraine Sullivan. We all were Sullivans at that time.
Were they younger than you?
Yes.
And had they ever sang before?
No.
So you recruited them to sing with you.
Exactly right.
As a family group.
Because, for what they didn't believe me. I said, well, let's get a group together. They said, yeah, right. And we started rehearsing and started getting it together. Then I came in rehearsal one night and said, I got our first gig. We're going to co-star with Lou Rawls. They said, right.
So you did a show with Lou Rawls?
Right, we co-starred with him.
Where was it?
This was at the time, High Chaparral.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So why didn't you want to form another? Where did you get the idea to form a group with your two sisters?
I saw a group in which I can't recall the name. They were so classy. And I saw them at a club called the Pink Poodle. I don't know if you can recall that. Okay. So as I'm looking at this group, I say, oh, I want to have a group like that. And they were so sharp with their tuxedos and all that. So that was very impressive. So I took the idea to my sisters. And they said, okay, let's go for it.
Okay.
And we became the Classic Sullivans.
And so was it hard at first because they hadn't been singing? Did you have to train them?
No, not really. They never sung professional.
But they were like natural singers.
Right, exactly.
And did you try to get a recording deal initially? Were you writing for other people at the time and you're like, I want to have my own group?
Mm-hmm.
And then you formed the Classic Sullivans.
Yes.
Was the idea originally just to do shows, or were you going to try to record also?
We did shows, but it really wasn't a stable idea just doing shows. Now, funny thing, when we first came out, we was called the Classic Sullivans, and we did a real big intro with the gold capes. And, and when we came out, we had our head up, and we dropped the capes, and we was in tuxedos. A guy told me, you know, I love your idea. It's fantastic. But it's not going to work in black clubs.
So the idea was to be really classy.
Right.
The idea. And you had classy in the name.
Uh-huh.
And I saw, yeah, one of your photos, you have a bunch of furs on.
Okay, right.
So how did you end up, so your first record you actually recorded was Shame, Shame, Shame.
Shame, Shame, Shame.
How did that happen?
Again, Clarence Johnson, he's very impressed with us, with the sound. I didn't realize what type of sound we had. The gentleman over here, he was saying we had the sound of the five stair steps, which I didn't realize. But, you know, we just sang it.
Well, it's just very Chicago sounding.
Yeah,
sound.
Chicago sound.
So I'm going to play Shame, 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 which became a big hit
in
Chicago.
Uh-huh.
And we could talk some more. So this is Eddie Sullivan and the Classic Sullivans with Shame, Shame, Shame.
Okay.
Okay, that was just the Classic Sullivans with their first record and big local hit, Shame, Shame, Shame.
Correct.
And, Eddie, you were just telling me that there's actually another person in addition to you three singing on the record.
Right. We added in Denise Williams for the top sound, for the top voice, rather. And it came out real good.
On your other records, is it just three people singing on the other 245?
Yeah, just three. Mm-hmm.
And that record, did it get any play outside of Chicago?
Shame, Shame?
Yeah.
Gary, it was such a big hit in Chicago, though. It made our name. We became real popular with that record, Shame, Shame, Shame.
And we were talking about how when you cut that record, you right even before cutting the record, you were doing big shows at the High Chaparral with mm-hmm. Lou Rawls, and the previous groups you were in were just didn't really do clubs at all. You just cut a few records. So was your goal with that group to be more of a nightclub act?
Yeah, I would say more of a nightclub. Again, we try to stick with the image of class, classic sound, and it worked.
Okay.
When we did Lou Rawls' show, we didn't do too much R&B.
Was it like jazz or pop?
I would say pop.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember some of the songs you did in that show?
What's the name of that?
I can't remember what
yeah,
time it was.
But
it was,
we did that as an opening.
Yeah, more today than yesterday.
Okay. Thank you.
I hate when people just sing the intro line.
Right.
You have to sing up to the chorus and think of what the song is.
But this was one of our opening songs. A guy came to us, and we played Guys and Gals, the club.
Okay.
We played there. We didn't really get over at all. And Gad approached us backstage, and he said, you know, you're really good, and the black audience is not taking what you're really trying to do. So here's my suggestion. Go back and do some OJs and Temptations.
Okay.
Which we did, and it, we started getting over with the audience then.
Okay. So did you ever do shows? Did you do shows mainly in Chicago? Did you ever do shows outside Chicago?
Mainly in Chicago until Marshall Thompson, he picked us up and put us on a tour with him.
So was that before he helped you get signed to Kwanzaa Records?
That was after Kwanzaa Records.
So you got signed to Kwanzaa Records, mm-hmm, which was a division of Warner Brothers.
Exactly.
And how did you get on the label?
We did a demo, which was Paint Yourself in the Corner. And I approached Marsha about it. I said, yeah, we got a demo, see what you like. When he heard it, he didn't even hear it all the way through. He said, let me make a call right away.
Okay.
And that's when he called Kwanzaa. And they heard it over the phone, and we was accepted with that particular song.
That's good. So the version they released, was it the demo version, or did you re-record it?
We re-record it.
Okay, where did you record it?
At the Universal Studio.
Okay.
It's downtown Chicago.
And you wrote this song, Paint Yourself in the Corner.
Right.
And it was arranged, the records were arranged by James Mack, and you helped.
Exactly.
And so this record became your biggest hit, is that right?
Biggest hit.
Let me play the record, Paint Yourself in a Corner,
okay,
and then we could talk some more.
Okay.
So this is the Classic Sullivans with Paint Yourself in a Corner.
Okay.
Now you want to run around, live it up and take the time. You're gonna paint yourself in a corner. The way you do it, the things you do. You're gonna paint yourself in a corner. You'll be the blame, nobody but you.
Okay, that was just the Classic Sullivans with their biggest hit, Paint Yourself in a Corner. And one thing you really notice about that song when you hear it is it's not only very Chicago-sounding, but it sounds kind of Curtis Mayfield-influenced. So that's accurate.
That's accurate, yeah.
And one thing I noticed is your voice actually sounds much different singing there than like on your earlier records.
You noticed that. Actually, the older I got, the higher I was singing.
So were you actually singing differently, or your actual voice got higher?
No, the voice just got higher.
Okay.
Which is kind of weird, isn't it? That you know, when you get older, the voice drops.
Yeah, I don't know why that would happen. So, and that record was actually, it was a national hit, is that right?
Right.
And so that record, and what's one thing that's strange, and it's kind of a mystery, is on the Billboard charts, for some reason, they write the other side, which is, I Don't Want to Lose You.
Exactly.
But I don't know, but did that side get any play, or was it Paint Your House on the Corner?
It's a funny story about that. When we was playing in different cities, people was asking for I Don't Want to Lose You.
Oh, okay.
And we didn't really rehearse with the band for that. So there we stuck.
So you think that that side actually maybe did get play in other cities?
Oh, yeah.
And in Chicago, Paint Yourself in the Corner got play.
Exactly.
And you cut one more follow-up record called A Ring Don't Mean a Thing Without Love, which is also a nice record, but that didn't really get much
No, we
play.
Didn't get the airplay that we thought we was going to get. The other side,
Right Before My Eyes,
I tried to put us into a pop feel, but that still didn't work out too well. Still had a good sound, though. Was that on that CD?
Yeah, I put that on here.
Oh, great. Okay.
And so all that was happening around 72, 73, something
right.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
And around that time, you also wrote that Love Horn record, If.
If, right.
So how long did the Classic Sullivan stay together?
After that, I would say a good... We used together a little while. Did a lot of traveling.
What other cities did you go to?
Philadelphia, New York, out in California, Detroit. You heard of Como Hall? We played there in Detroit.
I don't know many clubs there.
One of the biggest halls there. And we was on a show with the Isley Brothers and Joe Simon. And we touched base with quite a few of the big stars.
Did you ever do any, because I know you were talking about how it was one of your goals when you started to be classy and do like pop type music. Did you ever do shows for white audiences ever?
A few, not that many.
Where were some of those shows?
Oh, let me see if I can recall some. Place called in California, Mark III Club, and there was a big, a pop club. We played there, and I can't think of another club. Most of the clubs we played was black clubs, and we got over pretty good.
So you spent a few years traveling pretty much with the group.
I forgot that we did Apollo Theater.
Okay.
And I was afraid that, you know, we wasn't going to be accepted. I don't know why I felt this way, but that's the way, that's the feeling I had. And when we did play it, the audience accepted us all the way. We got big reviews. So after our show, I went to the guy backstage, and I asked him, why do you think the audience accepted us more? Like, he said, well, that's because you show so much confidence.
Okay.
And if you don't show confidence at the Apollo, you lost.
But you were saying you were nervous and thought that they wouldn't accept you, so.
Exactly.
I guess it didn't show through. So, do you remember what year the group broke up?
Oh, I really can't pinpoint again a year, because after they started diminishing, going down, we still was together singing, and we still doing that today at parties, me and my sisters.
Yeah, I know one of the things that happened was the club scene kind of closed down a lot. A lot of clubs closed, and record labels left Chicago, too.
Uh-huh.
I mean, is that one of the reasons?
That's partially one of the reasons. We didn't play that many clubs in Chicago, but the clubs we did play was big clubs.
Okay. And did you ever do any more writing? I know one of the later things I had that you wrote was a Heaven and Earth song called The Window Lady.
Yeah.
But you actually said you had written it earlier, and it was just used as a song they did.
Right, exactly. Okay, we did this under Clarence Johnson again. That's another song I thought was going to go super big, but it just didn't happen.
They didn't even they didn't even release it as a single.
No, it didn't, never come out.
So, what music stuff did you do after the Classic Sullivans? Like, what did you do in the late 70s and 80s?
In the late 70s? Classic Sullivans, I was really concentrating on them. I didn't get into other artists too much. I try to think of other artists. It don't come to mind right now.
Okay. I know that you actually were the manager of... I interviewed this guy, Wayne Reedus, and he had a group in the 70s called Sweet Mood.
Yeah.
And were you their manager?
Their manager, right.
Okay. Did you ever manage anyone else, too?
I can't think of anybody else. They would call... What was the name of this group? Now, the name of the group that you have, what is that name again?
Sweet Mood?
No, it was on the New Breed.
Oh, the New Breed, that was Wayne Reedus' group also.
Right.
Okay.
That's who I manage.
Okay.
They had a great sound.
Yeah.
In fact, they sounded to me like the originals of Motown.
Yeah, they did that song, The Prophet, and the I Am Somebody.
Right.
And then they became the People's Choice.
Uh-huh.
And actually, Ralph Johnson was in the...
He was involved.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's involved in quite a few of the groups Chicago has.
Yeah. And so, did you do any music stuff in the 80s then?
In the 80s? I can't recall, unless you have some footnotes.
Well, did you I know you started the Chicago Music Awards at some time.
Yeah, we did that.
What's the story with that? What was that?
I went to a music award show, and they didn't accept me in. They didn't let me in at all. And that really got me upset. I said, well, I'll start my own music award. Which I did. Me and my wife, Leah Sullivan, and we started Chicago Music Awards, which lasted about 4 or 5 years.
Did that go from the 80s to the 90s or sort of the
90s? No, not the 90s, but in the mid-80s.
And so what was it? Was it a yearly thing?
Yeah, it was a yearly thing. Now the idea of this particular show, we were going to have the top names, not perform, but they the one would give out the awards to the up-and-coming artists.
Okay.
So it was just backwards, you know.
Who were some of the big artists you gave awards to?
Really, we didn't give out the awards to the big stars. These were mostly up-and-coming artists. And they appreciated it so much. Some was crying, and just like the Academy Awards. And we had a... spotlights, searchlights outside, and we advertised it to be a black tie affair, in which people came for the occasion. It was really fantastic. The reason why it died out, we ran out of money, it was costing us too much, and we couldn't find the proper sponsors to really get in with us.
And I know... Did you have a separate group called the Sullivans at some point?
Mm-hmm.
Who were the Sullivans?
Sullivans included myself, my wife, Lee Sullivan, a guy named Ted and Gary. Ted France and Gary Logan. And who was the Sullivans?
I think Gary Logan was with that group, the Marlins, for a while, actually.
All right. Okay.
So when was the Sullivans around?
Sullivans around probably in the late 80s. I don't know if we hit the 90s. But my idea of the Sullivans was this. And we rehearsed, and I asked them, well, I didn't ask, but I told them, when we hit Chicago... I play our first gig. We're going to shock everybody because nobody knew we existed. And when we did play, it took Chicago by storm.
So what? So you did shows. Where did you do shows in Chicago?
Oh boy, not only Chicago, Gary. We didn't go out of town too much.
But where? But, what type of venues?
Mostly R&B shows, and we used to compare to like the Spinners.
Okay.
The dancing and all this. One time, my wife, she was just singing as lead singer, and she said that, well, I want to dance in the background like you guys. I said, well, you can't dance. Get out of here. That really hurt her feelings. And before I knew it, she learned the steps, and she was dancing just like us.
And you guys never recorded anything as the Sullivans?
We recorded, but it wasn't a major release. We did a couple of tunes. Mainly, it was like a demo.
Did you release it on a 45 or on a CD?
Never was released.
Okay. And what other music things have you been involved with since then?
See, Music Awards. Can't think of everything here. Going back so far.
weren't you recently part of some show? It was like a senior music.
Well, that's what's going on today.
It's okay.
The Serendipity show.
Okay.
And they have all that collected, all seniors who used to sing. Well, they still sing, not used to.
Okay.
But they still sing today. And big show, 17-piece orchestra, the whole bit.
So what is the show? What do you, like, do you do individual, you perform solo, or what is the show?
Yeah, I perform solo. I have background singers behind me. And it's going pretty good.
Where does it
Mainly, happen? We just play the Chicago Theater. But we are coming to the, what do you call this park, the new park.
Okay. And did you tell me you also produced some, like a Temptations, a Motown review?
Okay, we did the Taste of Motown show. That lasted pretty good. I forgot about it. I don't want to forget that one. But we did Taste of Motown. That lasted for about, maybe 6-7 years.
So what was the idea behind that?
Idea was to have good artists portray Motown stars. Just singing their songs. They didn't have to look like them or sound like them, just singing these songs. But just so happens, the ones we found, the artists, they sound real good. They sound just as good as the original artists.
So were you in the show?
I emceed the show.
So
my wife was in the show. What? She portrayed Gladys Knight.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Did she have a voice like a deep voice like Gladys Knight?
Not so much a deep voice, but she had a good voice that got her over. The crowd loved her.
And you had some other Chicago artists in there playing Motown artists?
Right.
What are some of the other Chicago artists you had singing?
A guy named Mangelo, he did Stevie Wonder. He was fantastic in doing Stevie Wonder. We changed up so many artists, I just can't think of their names. High Performers, they was the ones that did the Pips.
Okay.
Royalene, can't think of her last name, but anyway, she was Gladys Knight. She the one took over for Gladys Knight.
Okay.
And my wife, she started doing other stuff.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, I want to play one more record that you wrote.
Okay.
And then we can talk a little bit more.
Okay, great.
So, this is one of Denise Chandler's early records that you wrote with Lee Sane.
Okay.
And this track is called Glorious Feeling.
Oh, good.
Okay, that was just Denise Chandler and Lee Sane with Glorious Feeling, written by Eddie Sullivan, who is up here in the studio now telling his story. And you were just telling me who was on background on that record.
Yeah, the Love Lights.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so, first of all, thanks so much for coming down and telling your story.
Oh, you're very much welcome.
It covered a lot of years of Chicago music history.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any last words for the audience?
Well, I'd like to say, first again, thank you for inviting me down. I didn't realize at the time writing these songs was a Chicago sound. I just put songs out there. And I became a real popular songwriter in Chicago at that time. Of course, by me not being on Motown, that kind of put a little cut in it. I did get on Brunswick Records, but that's when he's on their way down. So,
did you write anything for any that was released on Brunswick?
On Brunswick, no.
So they hired you, but it was too late for
right,
the label.
Right, it's too late.
Yeah, well, definitely it's too bad just because you had an excellent songwriting style.
Well, thank you.
Like, the lyrics were just, I mean, you wrote really nice lyrics to your songs. They're well-constructed songs.
Thank you.
Okay, well, thanks so much for coming down.
Okay, Bob, I'll be keeping in touch.
Okay, and people should check out you in that show, the Serendipity Show.
Right, right.
When does that go?
Okay, that's usually every May, every year. I just thought of the park, Millennium Park. We'll be there September 23rd.
Okay.
And it's a big show. It's really, really nice.
Okay, so people should look out for
that. I've been with the show about 5 years now, and I enjoy it very much.
Okay, well, I'll definitely be looking out for it.
Okay. Oh, let me, one more thing. I did write a book. It's called When a Street Corner Was a Stage, and I'm going to try to get that out. That's about the doo-wop groups, of course.
So is it about doo-wop groups in Chicago?
Right.
Okay, well, people should definitely look out for that.
Okay.
Eddie Sullivan's book about what's called When the Street Corner Was a Stage.
Right.
Okay, well, I'll definitely be announcing it when it comes out. Let me know,
okay.
And I'll let everyone know.
Okay, I appreciate it.
Okay, well, thanks again. And this last record that I'm going to play is another one of the local hits you wrote by Love Horn.
Okay.
This track is called If.
Okay.